Uncles act as mentors by providing nephews and nieces with advice and sometimes criticism. They act as intergenerational buffers and family historians by engaging in family work with nephews and nieces, providing insights into the behavior of parents or siblings. Good uncles take an active part in the nieces and nephews' lives. They spend time with them, offer valuable perspective on the family, and help resolve conflicts. They are people whose kids and parents can both trust with difficult subjects and to advocate for their interests. Hi everybody and welcome to the Rainbow Channel. Today is the part one of my conversation with my nephew, who also happens to be a member of the LGBTQ plus community. I hope this episode and my conversation with my nephew will help inspire many of you and amplify the need for you as an uncle or aunt to be involved with your nephews and nieces and build that wonderful relationship with them. After all, we are family. I hope you will enjoy this episode. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the podcast. Today is a very special day, and I have someone with me who's so dear to me, and he knows this very well. Not only because we share the same passion on music, we both love musical tunes and show tunes, and he is also actually my nephew and also a member of the LGBTQ+. Please welcome my dearest nephew, Michael Polinas. Hey!
What's up? I'm good.
How are
this
you?
This is cool. I'm good. I'm saying this as if we didn't just speak on the phone about 10 hours ago.
Yes, we did. We were trying to do something really special because everyone knows that my nephew sings really well, and there's always like this family joke who sings well between me and my twin brother, who happens to be his father.
It's a war.
It's always like that. Yeah, and we were trying to do something really special earlier on. We were trying to sing together because we haven't sang together, right?
No, we never have.
We never have.
I don't know why.
I don't know why too. So we were trying to do it earlier on and it didn't work. But anyway, maybe eventually in another way, yeah. We'll try to figure it out.
In another time and place, it's meant to be.
Yes. How are you?
I'm good. I've had a busy weekend.
Busy weekend?
I'm preparing to go see a show. I spent my weekend, I'm seeing Six for the first time on Wednesday.
Oh gosh, the music is really good.
I know. You know what I did this weekend? I made this jacket that I'm gonna wear to see it.
Fantastic.
Like, I know. This is 3.5 hours of my life gone. Like, sticking on rhinestones to this jacket.
But it's worth it, though. It's worth it.
It's so worth it. And I know the people in the show, so I'm very excited.
Fantastic. I hope you get to meet them and get some pictures and then tell me about it. I love it.
Do you have a favorite song?
One of my favorite songs is, where is that?
If it's Don't Lose Your Head, I'm gonna lose it.
Yes, Don't Lose Your Head.
No!
Don't Lose Your Head.
That's everyone's favorite song, and I'm like, that's cool, but like, Heart of Stone?
Heart of Stone doesn't get the love.
Yeah, I love it. I love that tune. Don't Lose Your Head. Yeah.
Anyway, how are you?
I'm good. I was busy doing my move because I'm moving down to a new.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Because the whole floor is being refurbished. I don't know when exactly the whole floor will be refurbished, but because I'm due for, I'm going on a holiday, I don't want to be in a situation wherein they're doing the refurbishment and all my stuff are here, because for sure they're not going to get mercy out of it. Yeah. But anyway. Tell me about, so for the benefit of my listeners, so tell me about you, what you do, you're a student, you're taking drama and English.
So, I am first and foremost a theater kid, through and through, have been for 10, 11 years now. And it's been wild, but I on my side hustle is teaching. That's what I'm doing currently. Uh-huh. I've never told you this, but I'm actually a tutor right now. So my main subjects are English, history, and drama or theater studies, depending on what the students are taking, because apparently theater studies and drama are two different things here. I did not know that. I don't know why I didn't know that, considering I live here. But
well, you live in Australia now.
Yeah.
In Australia.
Yes, I moved nearly 2 months ago. Yuck, really? Has it been that long? Oh wow. I didn't tell anyone I was moving either. But yeah, hoping to move to the UK to do both teaching and theater, hopefully, because that's the goal. Because I love both. I don't really know how to do anything else except for those two things. That's pretty much all you need to know about me. I'm also, goes without saying, if you couldn't already tell by the way I'm speaking, I'm gay as fuck.
Yes, he is gay as fuck. Before we go on the gay as fuck part, so you've done quite a lot of shows already. When did you start being on a show? What was your? I remember your first break was in the musical Wizard of Oz.
That was like the big thing that got me into doing it over and over and over again. But when I was still in primary school growing up, I was always part of the school choir, leading stuff like that, leading the music stuff there. And then one day my teacher comes up to me with this ad in the newspaper. She goes, "Hey, I've noticed you've been singing Wizard of Oz a lot recently, and this audition notice happened to be in the newspaper. I cut it out for you, so here you go. I don't know what you're gonna do with it, but I think you should go for it." And then I was like, okay. I didn't think much of it because I didn't think theater was something that like people genuinely did for a job. Mm-hmm. I thought everybody was just having fun, like putting on ridiculous costumes and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, let's go for it. And then I got it, and then I got really excited. Then the audition the rehearsal process started, and I was like, oh, this is actually quite big. But I didn't realize how big it got until I walked into the theater for the first time, and I'm like, there is 2,500 seats here. Why am I here? Like as a 10-year-old, when that hit, when I realized that this is the theater we were performing in, I was like, I'm a tap out, this is gone. After that, how's the experience? It was wild doing that every day for the next 2 weeks. Uh-huh. I was off school. I was not going to school. Everyone was like, "Where is he? He hasn't been to school." You're like, "Do you guys not know he's performing at the Civic right now? Like, he's literally doing a show like right now." It was a very big show to start doing things with, because you know, Wizard of Oz, it's incredibly famous. Everybody knows the songs. Everybody knows the story. But other than that, you're dealing with, I think, almost 100 kids plus some live animals in the show. Like, we had a pig that pissed on, like, we had a pig that pissed on the stage.
Oh gosh.
And I remember very fondly slipping in that pig's piss. luckily there were no visible stains, but I remember it happened in front of a live audience.
Uh-huh.
Luckily my parents weren't there, otherwise they would have been really worried.
Good. And after Wizard of Oz,
I didn't do too many after that because puberty started a couple years after. you know, when the time comes for a guy's voice to start changing, you kind of don't do much. You just let it drop.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember taking vocal lessons when my voice was breaking, and luckily I had a great vocal coach that was like, okay, these are the exercises you need to do. I don't know how far your voice is going to drop, but it sounds like it's dropping rapidly and quite like it was definitely a big change. I remember being like, oh my God, I'm not a soprano anymore. My dreams of playing Christine and Phantom are over. It's like he is a Glinda girl no more. None of that toss bullshit. It's that those days are over. But yeah, and then the next proper show I did was The Wiz, which in hindsight is now a show I probably shouldn't have done, because if you know The Wiz, it's supposed to be only done by Black people.
Yeah.
I am in no way Black. however, I'm very often confused for being Latino. A lot of the time, people think I'm Mexican. People think I'm Mexican.
You definitely don't look like Asian. You're more of Latino, yeah, looking.
Yeah, I also don't act Asian. It's a very strange thing. People are like, I didn't think you were Filipino. And I'm just like, okay, good for you. Do you want a cookie? Like.
So after The Wiz, what happened? I think you need to break with the Legally Blonde.
Oh. Legally Blonde was huge for me. That was very eye-opening as to what I could do. But it was great that Legally Blonde came into my life at the time that it did, because I had, I had finished high school. I was doing uni at the time. I had been doing vocal training for about 2-3 years at that time. Mm-hmm. I had also gotten proper acting and musical theater training from my school here in Australia, which was, you know, it was great to actually use the techniques that I was learning about in a proper rehearsal situation. But also the role that I played was very interesting for me, because I don't think, because when you think of Legally Blonde and particularly Professor Callahan, you think of straight white dude who's an absolute asshole, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the thing that comes to your mind. But then to cast an openly gay Asian kid that looks nowhere near his middle age self is really cool. I kind of did my research being like, has there been any people of color playing Callahan before? And I think I'm the first.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So I was like, oh, fuck yeah. I'm definitely not the first gay guy, because every guy that's played Callahan before has been gay, which is great. There's also a horrible scene where Callahan, sexually harasses Elle, and I can confirm that both actresses I had to do that scene with felt 100% safer that I was not at all attracted to them in any way. like at that point where, like, you know, this is me like fully backing this poor girl into a corner and like kissing her. She was like, yeah, just plant one on me. Like, yeah.
And you did a good review on that one, on the article that you actually shared with me.
It was an interesting review. We all didn't really like it. Like, we were like, cool, we have a review on Broadway World. But like, the guy that reviewed us kind of hates musicals.
What is the Broadway World writing then?
Exactly, because one of the things he said was dance is an unnecessary evil of musical theater. And I'm like, it's musical theater.
Exactly, and there must be those kind of
things. It's musical theater. Part of musical theater is dance. Like, I know not every show has, is very dance heavy, but like the fact that you're calling one of the fundamentals of this art form an unnecessary evil, why?
That was a big letdown then.
Yeah, but overall, it was nice to be highlighted in the sense that like the only straight character amongst a bunch of cartoons, and I'm like, this is so shady, but I love it. Like, it was so rude, but I was like, I'm all for it. Like, you know, you can't stop him.
Well, as long as he has written something and your name is in it, that's
yeah. I've been exposed.
That's a big thing. Anyway,
I've been exposed.
Yeah. Apart from the musical, I know that you're a big Disney kid, which I understand that, you know, everyone. Loves Disney, and up until now, people my age love to watch a Disney film. If there's anything in theaters, so that's fine. But yours is obsession, I must say.
I wonder when are you going
to give up on that obsession about Disney?
Here's the thing about my Disney obsession is that it's actually quite mild. Like, I am, like considering what I've seen from other people, I am by no means obsessive. Like, I love Disney. I love it a lot. But, like, the things that some of these people do on Instagram are beyond me.
Beyond.
Like, I don't cosplay. I'm not at a Disney park every second day. I'm not out here going to Disney movie premieres. Also, you kind of have to give Disney some credit. Like, without Disney movies like Beauty and the Beast or Aladdin, would I be into musical theater at all? No.
Yeah, I understand. I think what I'm trying to point here is that, is it because of that obsession that sometimes your dad feels like you haven't really grown up mature because of those things?
You see, here's the thing that he doesn't like letting people know is that he loves it just as much as I do. He doesn't like letting people know that. But every time I'm watching a Disney movie and I like start taking my remote and forwarding it, he was like, why are you forwarding it? And I'm like, you're watching?
You are your son, what can I say?
I truly, well and truly am. And I don't know if I like it.
Anyway.
But no, for me, it's a comforting thing. Whenever I'm having like a shitty day, I'm just like I put on some Disney music and I'm like calm. Like, it neutralizes me.
Okay, so how old are you?
I'm 21. I don't look like it, but I am.
When you don't act like 21.
I don't act like 21. I don't look like 21. I don't know.
You're such a kid.
Look at what I'm wearing.
I know, that's why I'm saying you are such a kid.
like,
oh my gosh.
Honestly, I feel like people are drawn to the man-child mm-hmm. energy, though. Like, there's a certain chaos that people like about it. This is not me, like, confirming it. It's basically just me regurgitating what other people have said when they kind of, like, have something to say about me. Like, and it has, and most of the time, if not all the time, it's about the man-child energy that I just exude and how people react to it. And it's great. It gets a reaction out of people and it makes me memorable. So, like, you know, if that's the case, why give it up?
Well, at one point, you have to mature, okay? You have to be 21 or 22. Anyway, having said that, so you're an openly gay man, and when did you basically come out?
I didn't necessarily come out. I was more outed by someone.
Fudge. Who was that?
Yeah.
That is the biggest thing someone will...
Here's the thing. I don't actually know how it spread that quick because I was 14. I was 14 at the time.
You know already that you are.
I remember.
You are gay at the age of 14.
I've known since I was 6. Like, I knew.
Okay.
Very early on. I saw Zac Efron shirtless in High School Musical and I'm like, yeah, that's what I like.
Okay.
So I told one person, I told my best friend. Mm-hmm. I told my best friend that I was gay. He was so cool about it. He was like, yeah, I kind of knew. I just wanted to wait for you to say it. And I'm like, that's cool, that's great. And I told him on what I remember was a Friday night. And the following Monday, the entire school kind of knew.
What?
Like, it was, for some reason, it was such a big deal because at the school, basically nobody, like you were either openly gay and like horrendously bullied for it, or you were in the closet. So basically it was like, oh my god, did you hear there's this other gay kid at the school? And it was like such a scandal at the time, and I'm like, okay, this is weird. I didn't react too badly, not too bad. It was more of like, oh, my suspicions about you were true. Let's laugh about it. Uh-huh. At some point kind of became bullying. Like, it was bullying from the people who intended it to be, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, on the flip side, it was also, oh my god, I've known this whole time. I'm just so happy you finally confirmed it because I've been wanting to say something and I really want to laugh.
Okay. It wasn't bad then.
Yeah, so it wasn't too bad. And then my parents got into it.
What do you
mean? And I'm like, this is where it all goes to shit.
Okay.
Because, you know, you know the Christians. You know how the Christians are with the gays. You know how they are.
Yes.
You so, know yeah. how they are.
How was
are.
That for you? How was that for you?
It was traumatizing. But, like, traumatizing in a way that I can laugh about it now because of how ridiculous it actually was. Like, in the moment, it was obviously horrible because, you know, I'm 14. I'm a literal child.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you're also going to church every Sunday and you're kind of feeling like, oh my god, I'm not supposed to be here. Like, this is horrible. You know, like, you're you're sitting about that, you're sitting there and you're kind of thinking, oh my god, everything these people are saying is like a direct sort of like, oh my god, you're going to hell kind of crap.
It's an abomination. There
was
a lot,
and like the church we were going to at the time was like, it was incredibly extreme. Incredibly extreme. Like, my sister was out here getting shamed by our youth leaders for wearing black nail polish.
Are you kidding me?
No. No. Like, she literally had black nail polish on, and one of the youth leaders was like, oh my god, don't do that. It's the work of the devil. And I'm like, you're out here wearing all black. Like, so what is it? And at the time, I had this tall boy dresser that, and I had painted like different musical logos on it because, you know, I'm a bit of an art kid as well. And one of the head pastors of the church looked at all of these musical logos on my tall boy dresser and was like, these are the sources of your immoralities. Please get rid of it.
No way.
Yeah, she, and that, like, I was like I had the Wicked logo on my tall boy dresser. Immediately she was like, that's satanic.
What did your parents say?
Well, they didn't protest or anything because obviously she's the head of the church. She's one of the heads of the church and they respect her authority.
But that's basically, and, that's basically like, oh my god, that's ignorant.
I know, but also, but like, it was really weird. There was one of the youth leaders, she was preaching one day, and she kind of told us the struggle of like her with her sexuality, and then she's like, growing up I didn't know whether I was straight or bi, and then the whole I found Jesus part came into it, and then she's like, and then she kind of said this thing which really rocked my world, where she was like, you don't stop praying until they're straight. So at that point I was like, I don't feel safe here. But of course, like, you know, I couldn't do anything about it. Of course, that's when my rebellious phase started, where I just refused to go to church because of all the stuff that was being said there. There was one time I actually walked out of a, there was one time where I walked out of a service and like didn't tell anyone.
Oh, okay.
I just straight up walked out. I did not want to be there. I got into huge trouble for it, of course. But like, you know, what are you supposed to do as a gay kid sitting in a church that actively like doesn't believe in your existence?
Which is completely wrong.
Exactly.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? It's difficult, but it's weird because yeah. I think I remember that you posted something on Facebook, and then I'm like, I did ask you, like, did you just literally came out on Facebook? Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I don't remember
the like, post. It was itself.
I remember not explicitly saying I'm gay.
Yeah.
I definitely remember being like, just because it's different doesn't mean it's wrong.
I think it's sort of like a cryptic message or something.
It was incredibly cryptic, but the people that got it.
Yeah. And then I did ask your parents about it, especially your dad. And there is one thing that I warned your dad about it. And then I said, I hope you are going to, you know, I know it's difficult because of your religion and all that, but I hope you're going to look after Andre, because if not, you better just give Andre to me.
Why didn't he? I feel like my life would have gone so much sooner.
He will never give you to me, shut up. Anyway, so you're 21 years old, you are growing up as an adult, and you know, there's a lot of things nowadays like how to be really an adult, and with a lot of mental issues and all.
It's everywhere.
And I'm sure it's difficult to be an adult, especially as a gay man. Do you have like struggles as such, like being an adult? To become an adult or what?
Well, I mean, it's more of the fact that like, the struggle is that it's new, right? Like, especially, you know, you're turning, you know, you're in your 20s, you're not really like bound to anything. You don't really have, there's all of these, like, all of a sudden, like, unspoken rules and, like, stuff that you weren't really prepared for. But the struggle for me right now is kind of just, like, figuring out what my life, like, what I want my life to look like, which is really strange because it's something... Like, you know, it's something that you embellish in your mind as a kid. It's like, oh, I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do this. And then you're like, no, I'm broke as fuck. Maybe I can't do that. But also, it's kind of a struggle when, like, the climate of the world is rapidly changing. Like, you know, like all of these different social issues going on, mental health, like there's all of these factors that like you're just kind of expected to juggle by yourself. And it's kind of like, oh, this is weird. I don't know if I like it, but I have no choice, right?
Yeah, I think the generation nowadays, it's very, very different. I think it all have something to do with the fact that social media is huge and it influences a lot of things, good and bad, influences a lot of things. And then suddenly the world wokeism, you know, when people say that woke culture, that to me it's
here's
like,
the thing. I think there's definitely like a correct element to being woke. But it becomes almost satirical when you take it entirely too seriously.
Yeah.
Like I remember getting in trouble with this like radical feminist the other day simply because I held the door open for her. Like, she got so
no
mad
more
at me,
chivalry.
I held the door. Like, I was like, I'm like, she kind of came in with this angle of like, oh, just because I'm a woman, you don't think I can like open the door for myself? I'm like, am I not allowed to simply hold the door open for someone?
Gosh.
Like, at that point, like, and then, you know, it's kind of like that thing, who's the comedian that said it? It was Michelle Wolf, where it was like, apparently I'm not feminist enough for some feminists. It's stuff like that. Like, you know, it's like, some feminists are like, we want equal rights, we want equal pay. And there are other feminists that's like, we want to kill all men.
Well, yeah, it's very difficult, and it's very difficult to navigate life as it is at the moment, in a sense that there are so many things to consider. There are so many things that the world wanted to dictate people. There are so many standards that society is putting up on how people should basically carry themselves or how people should basically behave. And not just
absolutely
not just because of an age, not just for the fact that there is a certain amount of expectations on gender, there are also expectations about your age, your what do you call that, what exactly you do in life, and your social status and your almost everything. There's always a standard. So I wonder how you navigate this thing at at 21?
See, this is something that I figured out very early on. And like, I navigated it simply by not giving a fuck what other people thought. Here's my way of looking at it, right? You know, you see so many people brutally doing things to themselves just so that they could fit whatever standards they want to fit into, right? You know, there's a certain crowd they want to be part of. There's someone they want to impress. They want to be part of whatever community. But then to me, that's like, okay, good on you for making the effort, but who are you living for? Like, are you really gonna waste so much time and energy and maybe even money just to change everything about yourself just to fit a standard? Why would you do that? Like, it makes literally no sense to me. So it's like, oh, I'm not living for you, I'm living for me. I'm gonna do it in the way that is best for me. Like, you know, but obviously it's not in like a selfish way. Obviously compromise and like other things are gonna have to come into play. But it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, why do I need to do all this stuff just to be just to fit in? Like, I don't feel like I have to. Like, I don't make it a mission, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just something that's always come naturally to me. Like, you know, there's always been that thing of everyone being like, yeah, no, leave Michael alone. He knows what he's doing. May not be the most conventional way of doing it, but he gets the job done.
Yeah, and I think that's always the case. Like, the goddess and how you do it, as long as the job is done and what is expected of you, then I think you're good. And
no, exactly.
There's no such thing as explaining myself to you or to anybody.
Exactly.
You do you.
And if you look hot while doing it, like.
Exactly. So, you have questions. You have prepared questions for me
as to how you are going to
navigate life, because apparently, I'm a better person than your dad. I'm just kidding.
But we knew that, though.
I love you.
Oh, he's gay? Oh, he's gay? Oh, already better. Oh.
Okay, go for it.
Okay.
Go for it.
So you told me to categorize the questions. One question that I always ask adults, especially when in conversations like this, is what's something about adulting that you wish you knew when you started?
That's always actually a question. And to be honest with you, I don't know. I don't know what are those things that I wish I
knew. Nobody ever does, right?
Well, I knew that I was growing up because I'd rather that I managed to figure out myself rather than I hope I knew this even before, because it's like, if I knew it immediately, then what's there to learn and what's there to process?
Yeah.
What's there to navigate those kind of things? And I think I learned not to put pressure on myself, because I like when I fail. I like when I didn't do well, because there's always a space to improve yourself, to learn something out of that failure. I know it's always a question like, I wish I learned how to do this, but then again, but which one that you wish that you learned when you were a kid, or when you were growing up? Nothing in particular, because adulting is basically forever. It doesn't mean that I'm 50 years old or 51 years old.
Yeah, no,
learning or not still maturing or not, you know, because there are certain things that you probably think that, fucking hell, Tony, that is so childish of you. I'm supposed to
be, and
I'm still childish as well. So, you know, so those kind of things. But yeah, to answer your questions, there is nothing in particular that I can tell you that I wish that I learned when I was young. I think I was one of those person that I just let things happen. I don't even want to even think that I wish I knew that what it's like to be a gay guy, you know, when you're gay, when you're at the age of 20 or 30 or 40 or what. No such thing. So yeah, that's my answer.
Yeah. For me, a lot of what I base adulting off is like the financial system, because that's never taught in schools. We are not taught how to handle.
Basically, adulting is not taught in school.
It's not, which is why so many of us fail. it takes us literal years to get it right, and by that time when we do get it right, we will have wasted so much of our time. So many of my friends who are very well off and very like well financially set up, they're just like, you know, we're all kind of that stage of like, what the fuck are taxes again? Like, but also there's so many of us that are like, we were just so led astray by like, in terms of like life skills in high school, that like, you know, they keep saying, oh, we need to prepare you for the real world, but you're out here trying to teach us what the hell a right angle in math class is. Like when am I gonna physically need to look at a triangle and be like, oh yeah, no, that's obtuse. Like when is this gonna come in handy in real life? Like I wish they taught us like subjects in ways that would actually be applicable to real life. Like if you're gonna teach us math, at least teach us like the financial ways to like
saving and all that.
Use math, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
But then again, you know, there are still some people who they've learned so much lessons about finances and all that, but still they have not learned or not applied those learnings. There are some people still broke as fuck. Exactly. And there are some people who are good about finances. There are some people who are not really good at finances, and I'm probably one of them. But yeah, I mean, as you said, yours would be finance, but hopefully, because of finance that you were telling me, hopefully you know that it is really vital that you have a degree and then, you know, get a good job.
For sure.
Right. Anything
else? But then on the flip side, just one more thing. Like, but then you get on the flip side and you get all these white people that come in. They don't have a university degree, but they're rich as fuck doing whatever it is they do. And I'm just like, you know what? Maybe you're onto something.
What are you drinking? Can I have that too?
No. Literally, like what? You know, give me the 411. What is this? Like
formula.
Like are you just rich by inheritance? Because you didn't make it past high school. Like
I think there are some people
who
are gifted.
That's also a thing.
There are also some people who are, because the thing is, there is such a thing as you know when you're studying, there are people that are really good in books. They're really good in academics, particularly not good on social skills.
Anything else?
Exactly.
I mean, yes, my social skills are okay at best.
Yeah, so you know, sometimes when you navigate life, it's not just about books. It's about your social skills and how you know. Yeah. How are you going to toughen yourself in a world that is full of, you know?
Absolutely. It's
too complicated. There's a lot of BS in the world, yes. But a lot of things. But yeah, so I think that those kind of things, I understand that basic adulthood questions of one thing that you wish you learned when you were younger.
Oh. This is I cannot believe I wrote this question out like this. Do you have any other dream jobs, or is this fingering Cameron McIntosh for prostate cancer thing pretty much it?
That's not even the dream of poking Cameron McIntosh. But I did actually.
That's why. I know. You messaged me at 3 a.m. for it, and I have not stopped.
I actually wanted to perform. I've always wanted to perform.
Oh,
I think dancing came first than singing, but also the biggest
dream.
Yeah, but I think the biggest dream is actually to become a diplomat.
That's sexy. Wow.
I know.
Okay.
I've always wanted to be a diplomat. And I think if I was a diplomat, I could have represented the Philippines well and good.
I think so too.
nursing is actually came in as an accident because as far as I remember, I wasn't enrolled in any university at that time, and I think school was just about to open a month before. I wasn't particularly still enrolled in any university because I wanted to do other things. I remember we were planning to go to Japan, but we were not allowed to perform. So I have to be forced to go to school. But no regret. I think looking back, I think it makes sense. I went out nursing profession for a couple of years, and then I became a professional job applicant or job seeker. And then to a point, like all those exams that they, you know, that they will give you, I have like 100% score because they're all the same. So I always got the job, but then again, I always get bored. I will not stay on the job for a while because I always get bored until I decided, I think my profession is calling me. And so I left the country, and I left my boyfriend at that time just to pursue my career as a nurse. And I've never been bored, and I've still enjoyed it, and I'm still doing it, and I don't even think that I wanted to. I don't think I can be anything else apart from being a nurse. I a lot of people wanted me to audition to a lot of things, like singing contests. Some people are. I remember my voice teacher asked me to audition to some musicals, and I think you know that. And she knows that I'm not going to get the part, but she wanted me to just explain because that's what I wanted as well. But I think there's a sense of it's kind of too late for me to actually enjoy singing per se, and I actually didn't know that I was kind of good at it, and there's a certain amount of insecurity as well. And with regards to singing contest, not for me. I'm not a very competitive person.
Neither. I hate it.
I hate competition.
Okay, so basically, to summarize your whole monologue there, you gave up your dream to become a universal stereotype. Good for you.
Oh, fuck you. University stereotype. How dare you?
Not even university, just universal stereotypes. Not all Filipino nurses, but a lot of you motherfuckers are.
But yeah, well, it is what it is, hey.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, clearly you're never bored. You finger Cameron McIntosh. Okay, no, but here's the question I've been dying to ask. Did he like it?
It's not that
he's gay, right?
He's got a partner, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. I keep forgetting that he is, because he gives me such straight man vibes.
He's got a partner for a long time now.
Okay.
I don't think he actually enjoyed it. It's more of like, it's because there's a me too.
Yep.
But we had a good chat though. And we had a good chat. And then he revealed something about who's supposed to be playing this and that. So that was revealed. But then again, that was before the pandemic. And then pandemic happened. So everything.
Of course. Yeah.
I knew what.
I feel like there was a lot of information that.
I know. Because I knew what will be the next musical role of Rachel Ango.
But then, did that ever happen, or did it never happen?
It never happened.
Because I don't think it happened. Because of the pandemic, right?
And Rachel Ango got pregnant. She's now.
She's just a baby. She did too.
She must have delivered that baby already. But yeah, she was pregnant.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, she's going to go back to Les Mis.
I think she already did.
She already did it before, but she was going back.
Yeah.
Because
she's going back.
After Hamilton, she will be going back to Les Mis.
Yeah.
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 So there you go.
Okay. Cute. Okay. Moving on to, I guess, what might be the last question for the adulting part. What's something you wish you had more time for? Because every adult has one thing they all wish they had more time for.
I wish I had more time to enjoy more of being with family growing up.
Yeah, you're pretty. You're quite isolated.
Yeah, exactly. I think technically, I learned my maturity and my skills, my social skills, or however you call it, practically on my own.
Right. Me too. Like my social skills are. Weird.
Because I left the country when I was. 25 or something. So basically half of my
life, right.
I was on my own. I was on my own navigating my life. So if there is something that I have more time, is to be with family, learning that someone will tell me that this is how things done, how things are, you know, those kind of thing. Also, I am glad that I did do it on my own, because at that time no one tells you exactly what to do, like what time is
it
home. There's no one to explain those kind of thing. But then again, fucking hell, I failed miserably in a lot of things because no one tells you that what you're actually doing is wrong, you know, and then you only learn
and then,
about
and then,
it when
and then you get shit on
for doing things wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And you only learn about it when you're flat on your face. That, oh fuck, I suck.
Yeah.
And
that was so me growing up, because like, of course my parents had a different experience growing up. You know, they grew up completely in the, like, they obviously grew up in the Philippines. Like, you know, their entire childhood and like the early stages of their adult life were there. But like, for me, I grew up around white kids. Like, so of course my social skills and my social cues were going to be learned from people who were not like me.
Yeah.
Which made it at times incredibly difficult to interact with my parents, because they had no idea what I was on about. They didn't know why I was behaving the way I was. Cause like, you know,
like,
there's such a rebellion, these like pasty little white kids growing up, that you kind of adopt that behavior and your parents are like, we did not raise you to be like this. And I'm just like, you brought me to this country. like, you know, like, and you know, because I went to a Christian school as well, they for some reason just didn't want to believe that there were bad kids there. Or just like kids that had an attitude.
Yeah.
Which is so dumb, because every child at some point in their life is gonna have some serious attitude. Yeah. And especially when you're like, when you're a Christian kid growing up, you're very like, you know what it's like. You're quite suffocated in the fact that like, you need to devote your life to this. You need to follow all these rules. They say unconditional love, but really, you need to follow all these damn rules. Like, and it was so strange, because like, you know, it's what tech, like, there's a technical term for it. It's called, have you heard it before? It's called third culture individual. When you're of a certain ethnicity, but you're growing up outside your homeland.
Uh-huh.
So like, there's this immediate like disconnect from what your like true culture actually is. I don't know how to interact with other Filipinos. I don't know how to do that.
Because you've never allowed yourself to interact with them.
But I'm always.
Do you have Filipino friends, by the way?
Where. I do, but we all grew up in the same way. We all grew up in New Zealand, or we all grew up here. And we all just kind of don't know how to navigate a room that's only full of Filipinos.
Like, is that why you're
like,
so...
We don't know what...
Is that why you're not particularly excited of going to the Philippines?
Yes! Because it's why I haven't been back since.
I'm sure you'll surprise yourself, because I'm sure your cousins, especially Angelica, who else? Angelica, and they will relate to you well.
Yeah. And it's more just like, I'm very lost on like the social standards and social cues of Filipinos, that I'm just kind of like, well, I'm just gonna sit here and hope for the best.
You'll be fine.
Well, there you have it, the part one of my conversation with my nephew. He is clearly so opinionated and very smart and so talented. I hope you will listen to the part two as we talk about love and sex. And yes, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Till next time, everybody, please do not forget to follow my podcast, and please do not forget to subscribe so you will be notified with the next episode. This podcast is available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and other podcasting platforms. And this is Tony reminding each and every one of you that we are all beautiful, like every colors of the rainbow. Till next time, everybody, God bless. Mwah. Bye, everybody. Bye.